Get snacking and get cracking with a snack that packs a protein punch. Pistachios are known for their protein power, fiber, and better-for-you unsaturated fats for a combination that may help you keep feeling fuller longer. Wonderful Pistachios is a good source of protein with zero guilt. Each one-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. I love that they come in a variety of sizes and flavors, making this the perfect protein snack for any on-the-go adventure. Check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
We are back on the Flow Track Podcast. Day 4 recap coming to you from Austin, Texas. I am Kevin Sully. Joining me from somewhere else in the United States, we don't know. He's at a secret location. He's not good. He has all of his gambling winnings now. It's Gordon Mack. Hello, Gordon.
Hey, man. How you doing? Did you miss me? Was yesterday's pod all right?
You didn't listen? I've been on the road, man. It was a sensational podcast. It would have been great to have you on that podcast because that men's 100 as well was just such a stunner. It was cool to hear everybody's reaction. But no, it was cool to chat with Serenity. Pod was great. We talked, obviously, about that stunning men's 100 and all the other action that happened yesterday. The Barshim Tambiri tie world record from Yulimar Rojas. There was a lot going on yesterday, especially when it came to the field events as well too. But today we have two distance finals at the end here, Gordon, and we have Safwan Hassan completing one leg of the Hassanathon here. She is now 11,500 meters complete with 13,000 meters to go, and she picks up her first gold medal. And she does it on a day when she had to run in the morning session as well, too. So this is the only time that she'll have to run two races in one day. The pace was comfortable early on. They went 8:59 through 3K, and Hassan did what Hassan has done throughout her career, which is close really hard, 57 point for that last 400. I didn't think she was even going to attempt to do three events. And now that she has one down and just judging by how she's looked so far, you got to say this is shaping up pretty nicely for Hassan.
Yes, it's shaping up pretty nicely. But I would say, though, this 1500 that she has coming up, it's definitely going to be the hardest of the three looking now, seeing how this 5K unfolded. I do think Kip Yegan is going to be an incredibly tough challenge for her to do. But if she were to pull off the 15, then all that momentum, she's going to be a super lock in my mind for that 10K. I think it's either going to be gold, silver, gold, or gold, gold, gold. So that's what I'm guessing. I think no matter what, she's going to win that 10K. Based on what we see here in this 5K, her kick coming off of a prelim, which, you know, we could argue like, oh, double. And I don't think that prelim really took much out of her. It was in the morning. In reality, she ran a pretty fast 400 meters. If you run a fast 400 meters at like 9 a.m., how much does that take out of your legs at 10 p.m.? I don't know.
If you're Safwan Hassan, apparently not much. You're right. Yeah. If you're Safwan Hassan, not much. Correct.
I got to charge my computer. Hold up.
Yeah. Well, listen, while you charge your computer, I'll just say this. Each event posed a different challenge when you look at it. So 5,000 was the only one that she had to do with multiple running events on the same day. The 1500, it has her greatest rival, I think, her greatest individual threat in Kip Yegon. And then the 10,000 is at the end. So that's the race that's the longest, but also you have the cumulative toll of all the races that come before it. But there was a lot of talk about Obiri in this race being like a rival for Hassan. And I understand that because she won the 5,000 meter world title in 2019 when Hassan didn't run. But I thought Sagai would have been the greater threat here. She's run 3:53 indoors in a 1500. So she's got that top level 1500 speed that someone like Hassan has. And she'd run 14:13 in a 5K. And Hassan put her in the
and
rear.
She was undefeated this year.
Yeah. And Obiri, she's a gamer, was right there at the end and gets up for silver. All credit to her. But this might be the quote-unquote weaker of the three fields, but none of these races are going to be walkovers for Hassan. Like, she's going against historical greats in all of them. With Kip Yegon, you have someone who just ran that 351 in Monaco. With Sagai and Obiri, you have people who've run 14 teens, and Sagai has run 353. And then in the 10,000, you have Letzinet Gede, who's the world record holder. So there's triples, which we never see. And then there's this. This is so far beyond anything we've seen before. And it's also, I feel pretty confident in saying, it's going so far beyond anything we're going to see in the near future here, just because the level of competition that she's going to go against to do this is remarkable. There aren't any weak events in the three that she's trying here.
I mean, can you think of any great athlete, male or female, in the past 10, 20 years that could even attempt something like this, assuming this schedule, right? And, you know, look back at past 5K, 10K, 1500 meter champions in on both the men's and women's side. I mean, Mo Farah obviously is the one who's won a bunch of 5 and 10s, but do you think Mo Farah could have ever done a 5, 10, 15 triple?
Well, funny enough, I think if you look at the all-time list, Mo Farah's 1500, just on pure times, is his best time relative to the world list. But no, there's nobody out there. She stands alone. And in a way, the Doha World Championships was practice for this. We thought that was just an aberration because the schedule was weird. Oh, ha. She does the 15 and the 10. That's a quirky situation. And she gets it done in both those races. And Kip Yegon was good in that race, but Kip Yegon is better now than she was and have been better previous. So you can chalk it up a little bit to that. But no, that's what makes this so audacious by her, is just there's no precedent for it getting done in this era. John Galt from Let's Run posted a thing about, you know, it'll be the best achievement in women's distance running. And I was like, well, what about men's distance running too? And obviously you go back to Emil Zatopek, you know, in the 40s and 50s, and he tripled at the Olympics running 5, 10, and marathon. But just the depth of distance running in the world right now is so much different than it was 70 years ago. It's hard to compare. You could look at other doubles and other singular amazing performances, but what she's going to do, and she's only a third of the way through, let's be clear, she's still got two legs of this thing to go. It looks pretty good. What did you think? We always talk about team tactics in distance races, and I think it's one of the most overused terms because it rarely happens, and when it does, we don't even know how much effect it has. We saw in the men's 10,000 with Kisa of Uganda going out there and nobody following him, but it was used a lot during the Mo Farah era. Gordon, oh, are the Kenyans going to work together? Are the Ethiopians going to work together and make things fast? Here you had a situation where I think most people thought the faster the pace, the better for the field, right? Tire Hassan out just because of the cumulative effect of all these races. But in order to do that, it requires cooperation, not just from the people in the race, but you're asking cooperation from people throughout three different events here to make things hard on Hassan. And that means almost Kenya has to play nice with Ethiopia to work together to get the pace going. which is why I don't think it's going to happen. Kip Yeagon on her own is going to be an incredible threat and tough to beat. But what did you think about this race and just how easy it was for Hassan and how nicely it fits into what she's trying to do over these next few days? Like, do you think this was the easiest path forward for her? Were you surprised that people didn't make it harder on her?
Yeah, I'm always surprised sitting from the couch. Why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing that? But then I always have to remind myself, they don't give a flying lick of what we think or what people think is the best strategy. The only strategy they care about is not like the, you know, 10-foot wide looking, looking at all the permutations in the room. They're thinking about themselves, and they're not thinking about they're not like, ooh, big, bad, scary Hassan. They're just thinking, go into this race, run how I normally run to try to win races, and don't think about the factors of what Safwan Hassan is. The same way no one really thought. I mean, sometimes they tried to think about it with Mo Farah, but in the end, it never worked. So I think distance runners just like to not overthink it. Like, they're always told, because whenever you ask, hey, were you thinking about, like, you know, the competition and how you're, you know, what did you think about this race? Did you want to go slow or fast? And they always say, I just got to run my race. I just have to run my race. Yeah. It's like the universal, it's a clown question, bro. I'm just not going to listen to that. I mean, that's what they said to, that's what Ryan Benjamin said when he was going up against Carson Wilhelm in a semi. He said, were you thinking about him? He's like, no, I'm just thinking about my lane. Because once you start thinking about other people, crazy things happen.
Well, and I get it in the sprints because tactically, not really an impact there. I guess if you go out hard, you could try to influence people in a 400 or 400 meter hurdle race, but it's just so fluid in a distance race. And I think you're right, though. But I think also, why does a 5,000 meter runner who's not running the 10,000 really care that much about the 10,000? They're going to put all their mental energy into the 5,000. So asking them to sacrifice to push the pace and perhaps lessen their chance, but increase the field's chances against Hassan, I don't think they're going to listen too much to that. It's like, wait, I'm supposed to help her lose a race and later on? I want to win my race, or I want to try to medal in my race. Because this was a deep, solid field, and Hassan won going away. Like, this was not her getting pushed in the least. And I agree with you. I think this thing's going to come down to the 1500. All respect to Gede in the 10K. But I think Hassan is a bit more comfortable just controlling that race and knowing that she can close better. This comes down to closing speed. And Kip Yeagon is somebody who's proven that she can close quicker than Hassan. Nobody else in the world really has consistently done that.
I'm about to contradict myself. Got to run my own race. But you think Gede is watching all this unfold, seeing her win this 5K, fall in a 1500 prelim, come back, she's probably going to do well in the 1500. And she's like, all right, I'm just going to run the world record. That's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to run the world record. And there's no way another woman can run world record pace after doing this for an entire week. Now, that's me saying that, don't run your own race, overthink it, but you have to think.
Well, two problems, though. That would be the blueprint. Two problems, though. Is anybody going to help her and go with her? Is she going to get an Ethiopian teammate to help her? Do they actually try this? And two, the weather. We saw it rained there today, which lessened the humidity, I bet, a bit. But I mean, you saw the toll it took throughout the sessions today and yesterday as well, too. I just think you're putting yourself in a huge disadvantage to do it. And I think, so when they get to the start line, Hassan will have run, 13,500 meters already? And Gede will have run zero. But I think if you let Hassan hang around until there's 5K or 3K to go, she's gonna smell blood in the water at that point. And I think she's all that momentum, all that adrenaline of, oh man, I only got one more to go, is going to be working in her favor. But yeah, you're absolutely right. But I'm just talking about in a singular race, who's someone we've seen not just edge Hassan because Hassan was off her game, but go toe-to-toe with Hassan and beat her. And that was Kip Yeagon earlier this year in Monaco. Totally different setup here in championship, but we've seen Kip Yegon do it, and we've seen Kip Yegon win global gold. So I think that's still the toughest test, but you're absolutely right. She should do that. Will that happen? It never seems to come to fruition, but we haven't seen someone go for a triple before.
It's true. Talk a little bit about the men's steeple.
Men's steeple. Men's
one
steeple.
One of my many picks that I got right, for the record.
Yeah, we'll talk about your picks. We'll talk about your picks at the end. Yeah, I want to save. That's its own segment now. All right. El Bakkali of Morocco wins. Girma second from Ethiopia. Keegan third for Kenya. Kenya has their streak snapped of 9 straight Olympic. That Travis, I put a tweet and pulled that up, just putting Kenya's dominance in context, because you say, oh yeah, they won 9 straight. Well, they didn't compete in 80 or 76 because of the boycott. They won in 68. Yeah, not that one. You got to go. There's an even more impressive one. Track Superfan, at Track Superfan is the tweet, because they didn't compete in 68, or sorry, they won in 68. I think they lost in 64, but they became a country. They started competing as a country in 1963. So of the 11 that have taken place, Kenya's only lost one of them when they've competed. Kenya's only lost one Olympic steeple in which they've competed. Because when you take out the boycotts and you take into account how long the country's been around, it's just a staggering run of success here. Here it is. Years Kenya entered the Olympic steeple and didn't win. So remember, 64 is when they started. Benjamin Kogo went out in the heats. Then they won in 68, right? And then I mentioned they had a couple of years where they were out because of boycotts. And then we know that they won 9 in a row until then. So nobody's dominated their event quite like the Kenyans have in the steeple, and it came to an end today, which we could see coming. This was not a surprise at all.
Yeah, El Bakkali is like becoming, to me, one of like the perfect steeplers. He knows how to run like in between the barriers and do that well. He knows how to do a last 300 meter steeple kick, which is hard to do because it requires you accelerating, decelerating, because it's not an all out, because you got to slow down for every barrier. And he's been able to get that leg turnover perfectly timed with the accelerate, know when to pull off to get the over the barrier, redo it. And you could just tell in that final 300, like he was just, it looked like he was running on a treadmill, like, or like on a airport race walk where he was just like finding ways to accelerate past these other guys who are still like recalibrating from landing off the barrier to get back into the acceleration phase, and he was already going. So I think that's the key to being a great steepler, is really knowing how to accelerate, decelerate for like those final 4 barriers in order to win. And obviously you have to be fit and be like, you know, a 7:30 type 3K runner. And El Bakkali got his gold. He's been waiting for it. He's been like kind of building up to doing well in Diamond Leagues, winning Diamond Leagues, to now have the moment, and it's his. And I think he's going to be good for a few more years. I don't see him slowing down anytime soon.
And then you have Ethiopia becoming emergent in this event, which you say it's a long time coming. Did they just figure out that the steeplechase was here? And maybe part of it was Kenyan dominance was pushing them into other events. Obviously, Ethiopia's been so good in the 5 and the 10, but with Girma and Wale there. And Wale had a stumble towards the end. It looked like they could go 2-3 in this race. But, you know, Kenya only gets bronze, and then their second best guy is in 10th. I mean, just a crazy change in that event, right? From one Olympic cycle to the next. Which brings me to another thing, which is just crazy to show you how much things change in track and field. US gets their first gold tonight. And you're like, oh, must have been, did they do the hundreds tonight if you were watching from afar? No, women's discus. Women's discus was the first US gold. We've had the mixed gender 4x4. We've had both hundreds. had a long jump, had a high jump, had high hurdles for the women, all sorts of events that the U.S. has won gold or has the potential to win gold in. But it's Valerie Allman in the women's discus that brings the United States their first gold medal. This is a bit of a wild competition, Gordon. Every field event has had some dramatic twists and turns in it. She goes, throws 68-98 in that first round. Then I saw it's raining. People are sliding all over the ring. Some guy goes out there with a towel to try to dry it in the middle of the rainstorm, which was basically putting, you might as well just had to roll the paper towels out there trying to wipe it up. It wasn't working. They postpone the competition. They bring it back. They give people the throws back that they missed when they were sliding around in there. But it doesn't matter. Allman's throw still holds up. Germany's Pudens gets silver. Perez gets the bronze for Cuba. Sandra Perkovic, one of the all-time greats in the event, only finishes in fourth. So it is Allman getting the Americans' first gold medal.
And Allman was the heavy favorite. She didn't have the best mark in the world. An actual college kid had that. Van Kleeken of Netherlands, who I think went to Arizona State. But she got eliminated in the qualification. So she was the top seed coming in. But she's also been the most dominant seed. She'd been consistently throwing in the high 60s, low 70s, multiple times leading into the competition. So you would argue that Perez and Perkovic were probably the only two that could unseat Allman. But Allman had just shown so much. Like, if you look at a lot of her series, it's not like you have just one good throw and then a bunch of, like, other throws that are 5 meters behind. Like, she always stays within 1 meter of her best throw from a six-throw series. And that showed that she was able to and I think that was key here, because if she would have started off with a 66-meter throw, who knows what would have happened, right? Then it's all of a whole different competition, because the fact that she got that 68 high in before the rain just gave her that cushion where she doesn't have to push herself too hard. She can kind of hold back. You just have that cushion that everyone else is struggling in the 64s to 66s. And she knows she can foul a couple times. And once she started realizing, hey, people aren't closing the gap on me, just the pressure kind of falls off. And it makes it easier.
Yeah. And the United States has had a gold medalist recently. You know, Stephanie Brown-Trafton won in 08. So it's not like it's never happened before. But that was the only U.S. gold all the way after 1932. And it's not like they were on the medal podium consistently. I think they've now only medaled a handful of times still in this event. And then you go to the World Championships, and the United States has never won a gold medal at the World Championship or a medal of any color in the World Championship. So this is not where the U.S. is on the podium, knocking on the door consistently. So credit to Valerie Allman for getting it done there in the women's discus. You want to talk about the men's long jump here? Another event that was near and dear to your heart here. Break this one down. This was exciting too. This was last night in the United States, this morning in Tokyo.
Yeah, so I, on my 44 bets, I went big and I went with a plus 350 for the Greece athlete, Tentagoulou, to win. The competition, so plus 350, that means I win $350 after betting 100 if he wins. So the entire competition is going on, and the two Cuba athletes are doing really well, especially we'll bring up the results here on the screen. Zoom in, bring them on. So Juan Miguel Echavarri, he had a really good jump in the third round, 841, and no one was really licking that area. The two Cubans were both 1-2, 841, 821. Meanwhile, my Greece athlete, who I was hoping would find a way to come through in the clutch, was just hovering around the 810s. So he had 811, foul, 810, 815. And so I was like, it's over. But what happened was there was some like jostling for who got third. You know, Javon Harrison was sitting in the third position for a hot moment. The Spain athlete was in third position for a hot second. But then in Tetagula's final jump, he jumps the exact same jump as Itivari. So they have a tie, but his second best jump breaks the tie, which is 8:15. So therefore, he is currently in the lead. However, the Cuba athlete, then all he needs to do is have a in his final jump, have a better second place jump. So
yeah,
he only would need to jump 8:16, right? To actually probably, yeah, 8:16 to win. He doesn't need to jump 8:42. And he's hurt. He isn't able to get across the runway, pulls up, and Tentagolo, last moment, wins me $350 and wins the country of Greece another gold medal. You know, it's where the Olympics started, and it's coming home. The Olympic gold for the long jump is coming home to the country of Greece.
Yeah, I'm glad you emphasized the most important part of that there. Yeah, I mean, just clutch performance there for Tentaglu. Feel for Echevarria, they didn't get a chance, and he passed on five. Or he, I guess he, I guess, so he didn't have a, he only had four jumps in the entire competition, and three of them were illegal. You would have liked to see him just have a shot. Hey, can you get that 8:15? What did you think of Javon Harrison's meet overall? He gets seventh in the high jump and then fifth in the long jump. My feeling about it was real solid. Obviously, it's tough with how long the season is, but the, both events just ended up being really deep. And it wasn't just like, oh, there's one person who's way out in front of everybody else, then a bit of a drop, and then it makes a silver and bronze attainable. It's just a lot of people were in a log jam, as you mentioned, with the long jump there, around that similar distance, and same thing for the high jump.
Yeah, I mean, high jump, 237, what is what it took to medal. I think it's okay for Javon to be like, hey, I didn't have a 237 in me today. I think his PB is like 236, maybe 235. I'm not sure exactly. I think it's close to 237, but I'm not sure if it's 237 exactly. And then the long jump, there was an opportunity in a long jump, but the entire field was all just not jumping well, right? Everyone was jumping in the eight low teens. And there was that moment where he did have a good last jump to put himself in medal contention. He also had another jump that would have put him potentially in gold medal potential, but he was like 20 centimeters off the board. So like, he would add like 15 of those 20 centimeters to his actual jump. It would have put him maybe in the medal position. Yeah. But you know, he's young. He just came off of doing jumping in January of 2021 all the way to August of 2021. Long season, young kid. He's going to be fine. You need to do this. You need to have a championship like this to kind of set yourself up for going for medals in your next 3 to 4 to 5 global championships. Not everyone wins gold in year one or wins medal in year one.
Well, and especially when he's doing this double that's rarely contested. It has made me think, just to take a step back, we'll talk about the women's high hurdles here in a second, the other final, but these championships have all been about breaking the mold in a way. So you have Curly and Shrika Jackson switch from the 400 to the short sprints. You have Hassan just completely throwing caution into the wind and going for this triple. You have someone like Harrison who all, you know, all year has done this unconventional double that we haven't seen. It makes me think if, and even you go back a bit, a thing Mo doing 4 and 8. Now you can say, okay, these are just transformational athletes that we're never going to see again, but they're also serving as models for other people, either who are younger and competing right now or who are just on the rise in general of like, hey, why don't I take a shot at that? Because then it becomes a model to work off of. And if they're successful doing it, then you have people trying to replicate that same thing. And I like it because sometimes the gambles pay off, but sometimes they don't, but at least you're going for it. And with someone like Javon Harrison, if he ever gets this double down, it's just going to, well, first of all, two golds are better than one, but you know, two different disciplines here is fascinating. And then for Curly and Jackson, it obviously paid off with medals, and Hassan, it's just cool to see someone continually try to challenge themselves. Oh, I've already done two golds. What's next? Three. There's a limit to it at a certain point, but it's just, it's cool. It's cool to do. And it's cool to see. them just continually add challenge on top of challenge.
Yeah. And, you know, right. Maybe there's more in the horizon, right? Michael Norman, saw him run the 100. We've seen Jacobs Italian. He was a long jumper, right? Now he's running the 100 gold. Like, we're going to see more and more, I think. It's exciting. I think we might start seeing some 8:15s maybe. I know Clay Murphy dabbled in that and then immediately regretted it. But maybe if he comes out here and wins the 8, maybe he gets more excited and he starts redabbling in an 8:15 double. You said 2022 is going to be the year of the double because they literally are making every possible double easy to do, like perfect, right? With 1, 2, 2, 4, 4, 8, 8:15, 15, 5, 5, 10. So
yeah,
it's exciting.
Yeah. High hurdles, Jasmine Camacho Quinn completes her terrific season with a gold medal. 12:37 is the winning time. Kenny Harrison second, 12:52. Megan Tapper of Jamaica, 12:57. So Camacho Quinn finishes the year finishes her Olympic run. She's still got more meets to run. 5 times under 12:40 so far this year. Nobody else even broke it once. And you say, oh yeah, the best person wins. That's predictable. But how many times have we seen just in these first few days that doesn't always happen? So Camacho Quinn gets the victory. She's been good wherever she's raced, basically. The stakes and the stage doesn't matter. She's just been so consistent, knocking on the door. You can see the rest of the top 8 there on your screen. Gabby Cunningham of the U.S. Finished 7th. They got 2 through to the final.
Yeah. Kenny Harrison, back-to-back silvers. She clearly has... I don't know how many times we got to bring up 2016 to her. She always gets to answer that in her interview. How do you feel coming off of breaking a world record, not being on the Olympics and all that stuff? But she has found a way to now consistently put herself in the medal hunt and actually achieve a medal. She just happened to lose to a Camacho Quinn who's in the peak prime of her career. But, you know, you're not going to win them all, but – hey, 2 silvers is better than 0 medals. So, Jasmine Camacho Quinn, Camacho Quinn, world record. Like, do you think we're going to see that? And maybe like a Diamond League final or something?
We got a lot of meets left, Gordon. I don't know if you've looked at the schedule, but we have quite a few meets after the Olympics. She's going to take some swings at it, and I think she should. 12:26. Now, I know headwinds don't matter as much in the hurdles and tailwinds don't help as much because you get pushed in the hurdles, but minus 0.2, maybe she could get a little bit of a boost, ride that through. The track is obviously very quick, so I don't think it's I wouldn't put the chances at 90% or even 75%, but she's going to be in a lot of races with high caliber fields and races where on tracks where there's been fast performances. I don't know if they have it at the pre-classic, but that might be a stage for her. So, you know, she's only 6/100ths off of it. Here's the thing too. What's interesting. A lot of times those fast times, you know, semis to finals, every single round, we talked about this yesterday in the pod, every single round of the women's hurdles was separated by a day, so that means basically all of Camacho Quinn's fast times this year have come on just one day performances. So it's not like she needs, some people need, I was going to use Grant Holloway as an example, but he usually goes fast in the semi and then fast in the final. And in the trials, he actually went faster in the semi than in the final. So maybe it's not the perfect example, but yeah, she doesn't really need the rounds or the semis to get going. Like, she can do it on her own, one race setup in the Diamond League. I think it's definitely possible. It's going to be tough just to replicate the fast conditions of the track, but 6/100ths. What do you think?
I think she can do it. And I think if she doesn't do it this year, I can see her doing it in 2022. She's young still. Mm-hmm. I think she has a perfect opportunity. There's less pressure now too, in a way. Like, she already can be an Olympic gold medalist. Like, what else do you need to add to that, right? So there's not as much like overthinking the competition. It's like, hey, go out there and just see how far you can go. If you fail, who cares? You're the Olympic gold medals. You're the best in the world. So. You could argue that's the reason why Kenny Harrison broke the world record. She's like, I'm not going to Olympics, so Who cares if I fail? No one's going to care if I go out there and not run a world record. So you never know.
Yeah, just completely throw caution in the wind. She's 24, so got a bright future next few years with all those global championships. I think she's going to be looked at as the favorite after her season. Again, this was not a one race gold medal surprise. This was a season that just built on itself, you know, brick by brick, right? This was an accumulation of a series of terrific performances for Camacho Quinn. So first ever, the first medal for Puerto Rico at these Olympics and the first ever track and field gold medal for Puerto Rico. No doubt they're celebrating down there. Shall we go to some prelims now, Gordon?
Yes, because you know what they say. Prelim time is PR time. I don't know if it's so many PRs, but I just want to say that first.
All right, so we already talked about, we'll just tick through these one by one. We already talked about the women's 1500 with Hassan's heat. Everybody saw her fall.
Yeah.
Went on
all
her
three
back,
Americans got then, through, which is great.
Yeah, all three Americans got through. Faith Kipyegon got through. I don't think we need to spend a ton of time on that one. Women's 4-meter hurdle semis. So Sydney goes 53.03, Muhammad 53.30, and Femke Bol 53.91.
You know what? I think we should talk about the 1500.
You want to go back? It was, I will say this. I went to dinner last night. This is the first time I missed it live to tape it. And my phone was like blowing up. Like, did you see that? Did you see that? Did you see that? And I was like, great, just my luck. The one time I step away for a moment, like for an hour, I was like, women's 1500 meter prelims, they're going to be chalk. I'll tape them. I'll go back. I'll just make sure I don't miss anything. And then I'll get caught up before the high hurdle final. But then everybody was just all they were. The clip was everywhere, right? Because Safwan Hassan not only fell, not only tripped, but fell down hard, Gordon. She fell down hard on her hip and then got back up. And she was way out of contention. And then all of a sudden, she was not way out of contention. And then she was winning the heat.
Yeah, I posted on FloTrack Twitter account the splits that she had. She ran her last 400 in 61.1, which included the fall. But the ultimate race was the last 300, which is 43.8, which is like 58 second pace. But if you look at her last 100 was like kind of jogging, running 15.2. So in reality, she really closed well. Like, she could have gone even faster. Like, she could have probably ran her last 300 in like 42, maybe 41, if I'm going crazy. But she caught the pack before 100 meters to go and then just kind of cruised in for the win. It wasn't like she didn't need every last meter to close that gap in the final 380 meters.
No, and she certainly – she didn't need it to win, and she didn't need it to get into qualifying position. And I think it might have been Lincoln, one of the people texting me, basically saying they're going to need to try harder if they want to stop Safwan Hassan. Like, tripping her is not going to be enough. They're going to have to, or something. It was one of those falls too, where it was a chain reaction, so it took out a bunch of other people. It was like bowling pins in there, and then she went down. And I admit, when I first heard, okay, she fell and got back up, I didn't think it was going to be that bad of a fall. I thought it was going to be, okay, she just lost her footing or got clipped and she had to go down on her hands and then get right back up. But to go all the way around like that, some people don't even really get up, or they get up and they take 10 meters to get their bearings about them. She went right into, okay, this is a final now mode. This is a final. I need to run this last 300 like a final. I need to catch everybody.
Question. Do you think she needed to do that? Do you think she could have just jogged and got in on protest?
I don't know if she could have got in on protest, but she could have tried. She could have exerted less effort and still gotten like an easy qualifier. And I'd say that might impact her in the 5,000 meter final, but we've already seen the 5,000 meter final and it did not impact her at all. And now she has 2 days off before the next round. And I don't think it's going to factor in an iota.
Do you know what the first thing I thought about when she fell?
The first thing you thought about when she fell? What the odds would be that she wins, and if you could bet in real time?
No. I thought of U.S. great 1500 meter runner Morgan Eucene.
yeah,
who is really good at falling with one lap to go in a 1500. And I was like, well, I guess that kind of ends the myth that when you fall in a 1500, it's over, right? Because that's kind of what you would assume, well, right? And she just, I know it's a prelim, they're not.
Prelim versus the top final. Group, I think.
Yeah, it's different. That happens in a final. Not that she's, she did that. Imagine if she did that in the final. That would have been, holy crap.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think some of the people who, because it got picked up by non-track people, I think some people like thought that that was the final. I mean, don't get me wrong. It was incredibly impressive. But if you had Kip Yegon at the front driving that train, it's a different story. Maybe she does it. Yeah. I don't think we'll find out because she would be horribly unlucky to have that happen to her. All right. Do you want to move on to the prelims now? Or the other prelims?
Excuse Let's move me. On to prelims. Yeah.
Okay.
Let's talk about the 200.
For me,
200.
Okay. 200. We'll do 200 right now. 200. People in the chat seem to be interested about. Yeah, I think that they haven't listened to a thing we've said in the chat, which is great. Which is great. I mean, let's be honest.
But now that we say 200, they're all in.
Now we say, well, they've just been talking about the 200 in the chat the entire time. I've clicked a couple times and just seen some names pop up, and it's mostly been people in the 200. So
we should start the beginning. Let's start the beginning. Yesterday.
Okay. What?
Evening.
Okay. You're gonna walk us through this then?
Yeah. So I think the first shock, this has been a lot of shocks. The first shock was Sharika Jackson. Sharika Jackson, I think, was on pace to be a medalist, fourth place at worst. And she gets knocked out in the first round. And it was purely because she just got too confident and was trying to run as slow as possible. You could see that all the Jamaicans were trying to run that first round as slow as humanly possible. And Sharika Jackson just ended up getting beat by 0.005 seconds at the same time, 23:26 with the Italian athlete. And she doesn't get in because the heat that she was in was slow. And I one thing it just makes me think, how do these sprinters know that it's okay to shut it off? You're going so fast. I just feel like it's easy to tell to shut it off in like a 5K or a 1500 because you can look around, everyone's, you know, top six, but when you're in your own lane, you don't know who's coming flying by and the other side of the track. Like, and that's what happened to Sharika. She thought she was fine, and on the opposite side of the track, the Italian athlete nipped her. I just thought there was like, one, you feel bad for her, but it's also like, why are you taking it that easy? Like, come on, just put a little bit more effort in it. Don't. And this was reason. This is reason why I got to put a little bit more effort in that first round.
I don't. To me, it almost looked like she was just cruising to cruise. Because she had to have known. It wasn't like she was ahead and then a bunch of people passed her in the last couple strides. Like, she knew what position she was in. And it was very clear she was just completely jogging there. So I don't know if anybody asked her about it afterwards, but I don't know. I get what you're saying, and I know people have commented this on shutting it down early, but it just looked like she was going through the whole thing like a practice rep, basically, which makes me wonder if she wanted to even advance. That's all I'm saying.
No, I think she did. Because the other Jamaicans were doing practice runs. Like Thompson Herat, today runs 21.6. But yesterday she was not looking like a 21. She looked like Sharika Jackson out there, but just happened to be in a better position because she wasn't running 23.2.
But she ran faster. You know. She ran faster because she was trying harder. I mean, that was pretty clear, right?
But she's putting an effort that looked similar to what Sharika was doing, in my opinion.
She was, I think, until the last 50 or so, and then she got herself in good position. I mean, she could turn around and she could see people. She was aware. Fraser Price obviously ran solid. Yeah, that was a big surprise. So she's out, but everybody else advanced.
Yeah, yeah. So we now have lost. We've lost Blessing Okabare to HGH. We've lost Dina Asher-Smith to injury. And now we lost Sharika Jackson to dumbfoundedness of the first round. Now, time for the semis, which happened this morning. Look, I'm like, oh, no, wait, no. One more thing happened yesterday, which kind of connects to what happened today. Dude. Christine Momba. I said her name wrong. Christine Mboma. Mboma? How do I say her last name?
Yeah, I think it's Mboma.
Mboma. Dude, this is exciting. She is running in the face of World Athletics and their stupid-ass DSD rule where it's like, yeah, this is a problem, but only here where Caster Semenya is really good. It's not a problem anywhere else because we actually don't know the actual reality of the problem, so we're just going to pretend that the science told us 400 to 1,500. And now they're like, all right, so these Namibia athletes couldn't compete in the 400 after running 48. Namibia. I'm not even say words in it. N-A-M country. I'm not even going to say I'm
Namibia.
Really
you can do it. Saying. You can do it. Namibia.
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 There you go. Yeah.
Okay. That country had really good 400 meter runners running 48 seconds, 49 seconds. Gets screwed over and puts us in a 200. And we should have seen this coming because we had a viral 200 meter clip a few weeks back. Travis pulled it up on YouTube where we probably saw the greatest 200 meter kick of all time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
how many views does that have on YouTube? It's 1.1 million views. Let's watch this together. Let's watch back this greatest 200 meter kick. And this was this was showing what we're now seeing on the Olympic stage. So look in lane, she's the fifth lane or sixth lane, lane five. She's in like dead last. You'll see her. Wait for it. And go. Here she comes. Oh, she's coming. It's happening. It's happening. It's happening. And almost stumbled wins. Almost stumbled. Runs. Oh, so the time here, 22.6, not that impressive. But now she's doing that against people like Gabrielle Thomas twice and now running 21 seconds, not 22.6. And this has been the most incredible revelation happening in this 200 is the emergence of Christine. I'm not even going to say her last name, just of Christine. I'm calling her Cher. She's one name Titan, Christine.
Christine Mboma. Yeah. Also, if you want to go back a bit, I did, someone in the chat said Sharika Jackson posted about the race on Instagram, and she said, sometimes painful things can teach us lesson that we didn't think we needed to know. So perhaps you're right. Perhaps you're right. Yes. And it was just a mistake on her part. It's just hard to believe at this level, as fast as she is, that that's how that prelim would go. I know. See, the first round, everybody was, they had 200 in the morning and then 200 at night, which in the U.S. trials, they don't do. It's all separate. So I think people were being extra cautious with their energy. But if you go back and watch this race, and we're not going to obviously play it here, but there's like shutting it down, and then there's like never, like, then there's what she did. It was just it was so far beyond anything. So that's why that's why it surprised me. Back to present time now, or this morning. Okay, so then we have today's heats, and we got a couple highlights here. So Thompson Hurrah, speaking of, she shut it down. Now she shut it down, but she ran 180-ish, 175-ish, and she equaled that crazy time from the Beijing World Championships. She equaled the time that put her sixth all time, 21.66. So you're looking at that, you're looking at what she did in the 100, you're thinking she's going to put something out there that's an all-time mark in the final. I know we say the world record's out of reach because that's just what we've been conditioned to think, but so I mean, 21.34 is crazy, but could she go 21.4? Could she go 21.5? I'm not sure after seeing a 21.66 stopping that early that 21.5 should not be the expectation. Before we go any further, what did you think of Thompson?
Well, first of all, it's a lesson to me that if I'm going to bet on the 200, I need to bet on it earlier because she was like plus 300 to win, and now she's like minus 500 because of obviously what she did in the 100 and now running 21.66 slow, like chilling. She's a heavy favorite. I don't see anyone. It's now her versus the clock. It's not her versus the field. If she gets beat, that would be the most incredible upset I think we've seen. She's running Bolt-esque right now. 21.66 in the prelim. That's Bolt-esque. So that's what I took away from that. And I think it's going to be a fight for second and third. And it's going to be interesting because you're going to have the Boma versus the other, versus Shelly Ann versus even Thompson Hurrah versus the Americans. We thought it was going to be Jamaica American. Versus USA. American. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, American. We lose Jenna Prandini and Anivia Battle in this semi. But it's just going to be – it's weird. We have a different dynamic. You have the incredible week that Thompson is having, right? Boma, who is having an incredible 2 days of like, watch out for me and F you, World Athletics. You don't let me run? Okay, I'll take medal in this event. And then a year from now, you're going to say it's illegal for me to be in a 200. And then I'll win the 100. And then I'll be doing a 60 meters. And then I'll do the 55. And then I'll just be doing, you know, a shot put. And then you'll let me in. And then so you have her. Then you have Shelly Ann, who's on the revenge tour because, you know, she didn't like losing to Thompson Hurrah. She's going to want to get another medal. She's in great shape. And then you have Gabrielle Thomas, who she's run 21 multiple times, but she hasn't been looking good in these two prelim rounds. Good as perspective. She still has the third fastest time in this semi, but getting beat by Boma twice kind of makes it look a little worse. And I don't know. It's a flip of a coin. Who do you take? Who? We know Thompson's going to medal. If not win, she's probably going to win.
Yeah.
But who's your three? Don't worry about order. Who's your three?
I think Miller Weibo's going to medal. I think Miller Weibo's going to medal. Yeah, I think she's going to medal as well too. And then I think it's going to be between Fraser Price and Boma and Thomas for that third medal. I know I just ducked your question entirely. Boma's interesting.
Fine, but I asked for three and you gave me five. So give me three.
I'll say Fraser Price.
Okay.
So, but I'm not confident at all in this. One thing I want to mention, I mean, this field held up. Yeah, Jackson and Asher Smith aren't there, but we have Miller Weibo now in it. We have the two from Namibia, Masalingi and Mboma in there, which is, you know, adding obviously depth to this event. And you have the other two Jamaicans and then Thomas. It held strong. It's going to be a really good 200. The other thing I'm thinking about, like Mboma's, she closes really hard, but also part of that is the start is way behind everybody else. I mean, eventually that's going to cost her. And when you look at these times, you know, who can go up another level here? Who's able to run better than their semi? We know Thompson Hurrah. Well, we assume Thompson Hurrah can because she shut it down so early. Thomas has done it before. Obviously, Miller Weibo and Fraser Price have run faster than that before. You know, we don't know just because Mboma hasn't been around as long. Tolu, obviously, super consistent. She just ran a season's best. So, man. It's going to be great, but I think this is going to look a lot like the 100, and if the order was reversed and we hadn't seen what Thompson Hurrah did in the final in the 100, we'd be like, all right, anybody can win it, but it feels like we've seen this script before. It's going to be a historically fast race. I think Thompson Hurrah is going to win by a comfortable margin, and then it's going to be really close for, you know, two through six are going to be really tight. And it's going to be one of those situations where you say, man, in any other year, these other women could have won gold too.
Yeah, this is probably the one event I'm least looking forward to betting on because you just don't know, right? And betting on Thompson Hurrah to win is just not worth the money because she's going to win and you won't get good odds on that. But Shelly Ann, I feel like, is going to medal. I agree with you there. I don't know. Miller Weibo didn't look too good in her heat. She lost to Tolu in her heat. I don't know. I feel like
– You also have a good contrast in styles here too because Fraser Price and Thompson Hurrah are really quick coming out of the blocks. Miller Weibo, obviously a good closer. And then Mboma takes the closing thing to a whole new level because of the deficit that she digs herself into. Yeah, you'd like to see more from Miller Weibo, but at the same time, if we're drawing the parallel to the 100, maybe she's one of those people who just got through on that semi, right? And then they got to the, like, she didn't run her final today, Miller Weibo, I don't think anybody will say that she ran her final today. I mean, Jacobs of Italy didn't win his semi. Granted, it was the same day, a little bit different situation, but I could see her going up a different level. The final for the, when is the final for this one? How many do they, is tomorrow, correct?
It's,
or do they do 2 days up?
Yeah.
The schedule is so weird. Okay.
Tomorrow our time. I'm not sure if it's morning or evening, but it's tomorrow. I think it's tomorrow evening. No, it's tomorrow morning. It's tomorrow morning.
So this time tomorrow we'll be recapping the 200. And you wonder about those 100 meter women, just the accumulation of races at this point. Does that impact her? So.
No.
We don't know. We don't know. It is weird. You have a 10-day meet and then you make the 100 and 200 people compete in all their races in the first 5 days. I don't get the schedule at all. Like at all. Also, we got the women's 800 final tomorrow. Feels like we haven't seen them in forever. All right, so 200 semis. Let's do 400 semis. And then we can go back to the women's low hurdles and then talk a little bit of the women's pole vault, and then let you talk about your bets and see if there's any death heats out there. What was your read on the women's 4 meter hurdles with McLaughlin, Muhammad, and Bull winning their heats?
I had absolutely no read. I was just, I'm just waiting for the big three. I'm now putting Femke Bull in the big three with Muhammad and McLaughlin. Mm. I'm just waiting for the final. How many people were in this field? 45 probably, maybe more. Mm-hmm. How many people were in it? 40 something.
At the beginning,
42 of them didn't need. Yeah, how many people were invited to the women's 400 hurdles?
I get your point. Your point is saying it's a three-person race. That's what your point
is. It's been a three-person race from day one. We have yet to see any of them race each other. We've just been waiting and waiting, and now we finally get it. I don't know what else we can add to the women's 400 meter conversation except for Sydney's the favorite. She's trying to break the world record again. I don't know if she's trying. She says pressure's an illusion, which is mind-boggling. Dad didn't realize that till age 33. And then you're thinking if Sydney falters, who's the one that's going to step up and take it? Will it be Muhammad or Bull? I think we'll be less shocked if it's Muhammad, more shocked if it's Bull. But even if Bull were to win and run like 51 and – and Sydney and Muhammad get second and third in any order, we at the end of the day we'll be like, yeah, well, Bull's good. Like, she just timed her big breakout race for the Olympic final.
53.03 for Sydney. That's exactly what she ran in the semis in Eugene at the trials. Different weather conditions that day because it was raining really hard in Tokyo during those 400 meter hurdle races, but it's almost like she's just got this checklist that she's working her way through, and she's got one more box here. I think the world record is going to go down here. I think she's going to need to run the world record to win it, and I'd anticipate the form will hold. I mean Muhammad's looked really good, but also Bull's been doing that thing where after she goes over the last hurdle she just like really jogs, so it's really hard to tell what her actual potential is in this meet. But looking at what she did coming into the Olympics when she was going, you know, full out, when she was running those 52s and getting those wins over Shamir Little, she's sharp. So
what place do you think we could get Dalila, Sydney, Femke Bull, and Shamir Little to get their own lane in a 4x4, but their lane has hurdles? Mm-hmm. Do you think that 4x4, where they actually have to run 400 hurdles, 4x400 meter hurdles, do you think that could beat – how many countries would lose to a 4x400 meter hurdle relay of Dalila, Sydney, Femke Bull, and Shamir Little?
You're going to need a lot of
countries
lanes.
Would lose.
No one's going to be able to run on the track with them. They're going to use a lot. They're going to have to reset the hurdles. What if they hit a hurdle?
You hire 10 employees to move the hurdle after every rep back. That'd be fun to watch. You would totally watch that. Watching the all-star 400 meter hurdle, big four, and see them race like a country or a college or something like that in a 4x4. That'd be fun. Or just no, even better, race like a four like professional basketball players or something like that. Or like just like male athletes who
I can tell you that would run like that wouldn't go well for them.
Well, no, I mean, I'm sure there's some athletes out there, male athletes who only can run like 52 seconds. I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Who are like legit, like Tom Brady can't break 50. Tom Brady probably runs like a 54.
What? No. Yeah. Tom Brady can't break 60 in a flat 400 or hurdles.
Yeah, flat 400.
Well, in either. He can't break 60. Have you seen him move in the pocket? And break it probably for like a 300. All right, let's keep going. Okay, men's 400 hurdle semis. Big story here was Karani James breaking 44 seconds, first time since 2017. Looked like a throwback performance. Sorry, 400 semis. Flat 400 semis. Karani James, 43.88, first sub 44 since 2017. Throwback performance there. His heat was fast. Zambrano of Colombia ran 43.93 just behind him. Those were the only two guys under 44 in their heat. Michael Cherry won heat two. Stephen Gardner, Michael Norman go 1-2 in the last heat, and Wade Van Niekerk is out. Your thoughts?
Well, the Wade Van Niekerk being out, we know this podcast draws a lot of South African fans who hated Lincoln for his "it's over for Van Niekerk." Are they going to send an apology to Lincoln in the mail? He lives in Taylor, Texas. He's neighbors with Fred Curley. You can send both apology letters to the anti-100 meter Fred Curley decision and the anti-Lincoln for not believing in Wade Van Niekerk being at the top of the game in the globe. But yeah, I mean, Van Niekerk just clearly isn't – he's not back to consistent low 44 shape the way all these other younger guys are. So mm-hmm. – It makes sense when you really look at it, like what you did, all the greatness that you did in 2016 and 2017 doesn't just automatically come back in 2021 when you're dealing with the injuries you're dealing with. So still a valiant effort. I think maybe he needs another year and maybe he can find a way to make the final in 2022. I am concerned about Michael Norman. I don't think he's the favorite anymore. He hasn't looked good in both heats, the first round and the second round. He doesn't look like I'm ready to run 43.8 to win it. Like the person who's running the way we thought Michael Norman would run for America is Michael Cherry. Like we're choosing the wrong Michael here for the U.S. favorite because Cherry has been cruise control in both the first round and the semis. And I think Michael Cherry is basically the USA's only hope for gold. But gold, I feel like, is really falling out of the grips for potential American to win. Stephen Gardner's running incredibly well. He's jogging while running fast. And obviously, the emergence of Karani James back with the 43s and Zambrano with his 43.
Yeah.
I could see a situation where no American podiums. And I can see a situation where Michael Cherry is the only one who podiums. I'm starting to believe that Michael Norman's not going to medal.
This thing got deep in a hurry. Talked about Zambrano and how he was under the radar despite being a medalist in Doha. He's clearly coming to play. You have the emergence of James, which is a surprise. I mean, he was back in Doha. He was solid, but he wasn't at this level. And 400-meter race is something for the young guys. So to do it as well as he's done it for this long, you can't take that for granted. I think Gardner's been running. I agree. Cherry's been impressive, more impressive than Norman, but Gardner's been running like a favorite too. I think I think that's the best 400 ever in a t-shirt, what he did today. And it wasn't even one of those like tight fitting t-shirts. Like it was like a loose t-shirt. I was impressed by his level of casual out there. Even the bib was kind of off to the side. It was well done by Gardner. But I think I share your concern because you keep waiting for Norman. And when you watch heats, you can talk yourself really into anything. This is what I realized. Oh, they got first? Clearly the favorite. Oh, they got second in that heat? That's exactly where they want to be. They're not expending any extra energy. Oh, they got in on time? Well, that'll come back to help them later on. You have how many days until the final now? Like 2 days until the final. So this wasn't a situation of budgeting energy. And it's not like he's never run 400 and then a 4x4 and gone all out in both, or doubled up in some other race in college. He has experience doing that. So I just wonder, hey, what are you holding it for? And you could tell he wasn't completely going to the well, but he's so relaxed and so composed. But then there's also a part of you where you're thinking he wanted to take it easier this year. He wanted to be methodical. And if he runs 43.6 in the final, no one's going to be surprised by it. But you're right. Where's the evidence this year? The trials was great. It's still above 44. Wasn't a dominant performance. But where's the evidence over the last couple of years that he's going to be a gold medalist? A lot of other guys now have better cases.
Yeah.
That they've surpassed him, because someone like Zambrano and someone like James, we have more recent evidence of them just being able to pop that sort of time out there. So I'm with you, and it's a bit of a surprise, because going into the year, I thought, okay, he'll be able to handle this field. And if you said, okay, best time in the world going into the Olympics was going to be 43.85, you'd say, okay, that was Michael Norman's time. And it turns out it wasn't. And the other two 40, sub 44s this year are Karani James and Zambrano. It's surprising.
Yeah, it's just that the Zambrano, James, and Gardner just have chosen to like not put their have been waiting, timing their seasons the best, right? You see all these Americans before these three marks by Zambrano, James, and Gardner, it was all USA, right? Ross from Eugene, mm-hmm. Norman, Noah Williams, who's on the team, Michael Cherry, Michael Norman. It was all USA. You know what's aging like milk? Is the FloTrack top 10 400 meter rankings for the world. Travis, you want to bring those up?
Aging like milk. I like that. Good?
Let's bring up what – they're not good right now. Let's bring up
what the 400. Gordon highlighting his own failure here. Oh, yeah, that's rough. Well,
they're just like – they're U.S. bias, right? You just – if you remove America, then they're aging like fine wine, right? Gardner, Zambrano, James. Then it's like the best rankings, and McWalla, 7th. I had Correa in there too, who's scratched on
false started.
False started on purpose.
Yeah, but yeah, I did not take that into account.
I did not take that into account. So yeah, aging like fine wine if you just pretend America doesn't exist.
So
milk if America.
Norman's whole mantra is patience. He has shirts that are made that say patience. Just as Sydney says, pressure is an illusion. Michael Norman says patience. So this
people
would
love
be
letters that start with P.
Yeah, process baby.
Process, patience, and
press. So you got a guy who's run 43.45, albeit several years ago. At this point, he's got a good poker face. I'll say that. If he comes to the final and wins this thing, I don't even care by how. I was going to say, and he wins convincing. I don't even care. If he just wins this thing, he's got a phenomenal poker face, and he's played us all, basically. And not just at this meet, but this whole season, never going under 44. And if you think about it, the only time his fastest time came in the only real race that's mattered this year. He also, you know, got third in a race. It would be, I don't know, rope-a-dope or what would be the right term, but he certainly got us all convinced that he's not the favorite. I don't know if you can look at the odds anymore if they update those live, but it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, they're updated now. So let me bring it up. The odds for the men's 400, Gardner -167, then James +300, Zambrano +1,000, Norman +1,100, Cherry +1,500. Gardner is -1,000 to medal, James -250 to medal, Zambrano -125 to medal. Norman is still -112 to medal, and then but Cherry plus to medal.
+1,100. +1,100? Imagine getting that a month ago. A week ago.
Yeah.
That's just incredible to think about. But,
speaking of betting.
Well, no, we're not there yet. Women's pole vault.
We're not there yet.
Women's pole vault. Real surprise.
Something happened?
Well, yeah, Sandy Morris, her pole broke on an attempt, and then she got injured, so she did not qualify. We can have Travis pull up the results of the qualifiers there. So bad luck there for Sandy Morris to see her Olympics come to an end. In her, I think in her section, she finished ninth. Yeah, she got over 440. And there was one attempt after the pole break when it looked like she was grabbing her hip. We got the entire results up there. Now, Travis is just pulling up PDF after PDF here, but I want to see the other Americans if they got through here. Katie Najat, I believe, got through. Did we get that? I can't see. It's too small. Gordon, you got your glasses on?
Yeah. All I think is that.
Yeah, she's fine. She's fine. Najat's in.
Yeah, Najat's fine. Yeah, I just, as I'm betting all 44 events, I hadn't placed my bet yet on pole vault, but I was planning on using Najat as a helper for a parlay, but now that helper becomes less valuable because Najat's odds are going to go up or down. I'm not sure what they're going to be. Worse odds because now that Sandy Morris isn't in the final, people who would have put bet money on Morris are now going to put it on Najat. So anyway, that's me thinking betting now all the time instead of the actual competition. So
yeah,
that sucks. I mean, think of who told you Sandy Morris and both Sandy Morris and Sam Kendricks.
Yeah.
Both not in the Olympic pole vault final. It's wild. One for the injury there and the other one for COVID. It's just wild.
Yeah. Yeah, unpredictable.
Trey Hardy said Sandy's in terrible pain here, being attended to in the front bun. Her games are over almost before they started. The reigning Olympic silver medalist. Hashtag athletics. Trey Hardy using hashtag athletics. Not instead of hashtag track and field. That's interesting. Mm. No one calls it athletics in America. We call it track and field. We use inches.
Okay.
We don't use meters. Okay, sorry.
I still use meters. I'm the rare track and field and then meters. That's the hill I've chosen.
Yeah, that's how I am too. Yeah.
To die on. All right. Yeah, your bets, and then
bets?
While you talk about your bets briefly, and then I'll try to find a death heat for tonight.
So I kind of want to do a recap of the journey I've been on. So after the women's shot put, when I picked Valerie Adams to medal, I was up $475 profit. So I was at an all-time high going into today, but then this morning, or not today, or yesterday morning. Then I just started getting some losers. I lost my men's high jump pick, the Russian to medal, so I lost $100. Then I had Povia to triple jump to medal, lost another $100. Then I had an interesting bet where I needed either Baker or Curley to win gold in the 100, and that didn't work, so then I lost $150. So I was up $475, and then I went all the way down to being up $125, but then I went on a run, and I'm on a great run right now. I got the Greece athlete winning gold, which was plus 350. I did a parlay with Harrison to medal and Almond to gold, which gave me a plus 131 odds. I got that. I picked the El Bacale to win gold. That gave me some money. And then I lost the 5K because I was trying to chase some money there. I lost $100 there. So now I'm up 837 going into day, what, four? Where are we going into? Day four? Up $837.
Five.
Day five. First question for you, Kevin. Did you envision a scenario where I would have $837 in my pocket this late into this experiment of betting $100 on every event?
No, I was counting on you losing, and I was counting on you just becoming really depressed as the meet went on and being progressively less engaged and getting angry. So this is a strange turn of events, no doubt. The big one there. Tentaglue, man.
Tentaglue.
Getting you fourth on his last jump. You got that by a centimeter. And I guess the parlay there, too. So the Harrison getting the medal, I think that was pretty easy. But the Almond gold, yeah, you took some risks here.
Yeah. So now this isn't just about me. It's about the people. So I'm going to tell you guys my upcoming bets. You can take it or leave it. The odds probably are different now as things have gone on. But I'm betting plus 225 on Rye Benjamin to win gold. So that's going to be hard. That's later tonight. I'm betting minus 118 for Chris Nielsen, the medal. And then I'm doing a parlay on Brittany Reese medaling plus Rudy Winkler medaling in the hammer. And that's a plus 123. I have yet to do a bet on the women's hammer throw. And I'll give you one more. I'm going with Riki to medal in the 800, women's 800 with plus 115. I have yet to figure out my women's hammer throw and women's 200 meter bet. I'll figure that out later. But yeah, so Rhys, Winkler, parlay, both to medal in the long jump and hammer throw. Benjamin, gold in the 400 hurdles. Nielsen, medal in the pole vault. Riki, medal in the 800. And then hammer throw and 200 for the women. Don't know yet. And then I do have a bet coming up. I have money on Clayton Murphy to win gold. It's plus 1,000.
Okay.
So I'm excited.
Here's what's the smallest amount you can bet in your in the system that you use?
$100. However,
that's small. No, I mean I not guess 50, you personally. 50.
Okay. What do you mean? You can bet as little money as you want. You can bet $2 on anything.
I mean, there's a guy who he was a favorite a couple weeks ago at plus 1,100. We just talked about, and puts maybe on the rope a dope. Maybe it's a $50 one.
On that. Yeah, because then again, if you get it right, you make it up.
I don't. I wouldn't say he's the favorite now, but since you're up, you can take a few risks here. Yeah.
Well, that's what I did with Curly.
Yeah,
Curly was plus 1,200 to win, and so I was like $50, and he almost won. That would have hit. So this is why gambling is bad, because you see this. And
yeah, don't do that. Don't
feel
do
like
what
there's
Gordon's
free
doing.
Money everywhere, and it doesn't work out. So hopefully the goal for me is to end with $0. So then it shows that don't gamble. But it was a fun roller coaster. But right now I'm up 837 with, 30 more bets to make. So
I found the death heat that I want to talk about, because
it's a death heat.
Well, in the next session, we have the men's 1500 first round. It's a first round, so you get a lot of people through here. But listen to heat one here, Gordon. You got Cole Hawker in there. You got Cole Hawker, Philip Ingebrigtsen, Oliver Hoare, Timothy Chariot, Josh Kerr, and Samuel Tefera.
That's a pretty
first six. First six plus the next six fastest. So it may not end up knocking anybody out, but that is a pretty loaded heat when you talk about Chariot at the top. Yeah, Chariot, then you got Kerr and Hoare, and then Philip Ingebrigtsen and Cole Hawker. So there's going to be a desire there to keep the pace moving, because it is heat one and they don't know what they need to beat. Yeah.
How does Chariot run prelims? Is he like a sit and kick guy in the prelims the way he isn't in the final? Because final, it's going to be fast, but.
Yeah. I don't think he's going to go out and run. I don't think he's going to go out and run like 54 for the first lap per se, but it's not going to be like a 63. I don't think. I think you find something in the middle here. So heat, let me go through the other heats though. Heat two has Lewandowski, Centro, Abel Kipsang, Jai Edwards, Jake Whiteman. And then heat three has, El Bakali's coming back after the steeple and doubling. Ingebrigtsen, Suleiman, Mosagala, Jake Hayward, Samatwo, Nagus, among others. So I think heat number one earns the title of death heat.
Yeah. And then I also heard that heat two of the 5K is pretty good.
Heat two of the 5K? Can we pull that one?
The 5K he's already.
Yeah, we're already there.
We're already thinking about heat two of 5K. So McDonald, he's good. Grijalva, welcome to the Olympics. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Justin Knight. Oh, it's like college, it's NCAA season. Oh, okay. Katir, Chelimo. Ooh. Fisher. Cheptegei. Ooh. Tiernan. So, yeah. Fisher, Chelimo, Kiplimo, Cheptegei, Katir, and then McDonald and Knight. The two Ugandans, the two best Americans, and then also Katir, who Mohamed Katir, for those who don't know, is having an incredible season for Spain. And then throw in the other like strong guys like Justin Knight and Morgan McDonald. This is going to be baptism by fire for Luis Grijalva. I know that. This is going to be wild. And it's – how do they do? Top six? Is it that same thing, top six? And then next Maybe it's top for five. 5K? It's five. Top five. Man, yeah. I don't know what's going to happen here.
So we
might see some carnage.
Yeah. So the session tonight in the U.S. is going to be a morning session. So we're going to see Warholm and Rye Benjamin in that race. That's going to be the last race that happens, again, tonight in the morning over in Tokyo. Also, men's 200 heats, so we'll see Lyles. Women's 400-meter heats. So Miller Weibo is going to have to run that 400 in the morning and then come back at night, or in our time zone, run it in at night and then come back in the morning. And then tomorrow morning, that men's semi. So we'll see two Noah Lyles races between now and the next time we record. Women's 800 final and the women's 200 final. There's going to be a lot tomorrow. Tomorrow, like, things really get going here in terms of a lot of big finals.
And the podcasts get longer because more finals to talk about, more prelims to talk about, more death heats, more gamblings. Let's hope. Mm-hmm. So here's the thing. I can lose 8 straight bets now and still be positive, which is a good sign. I can go 0-8, which is good.
Speak it into existence, man. Speak it into existence.
Exactly.
As they say, there's no such thing as – or gambling is an illusion. Pressure. Losing your money is an illusion. Yeah, pressure is an illusion.
Money is an illusion. Money is not real.
It's about to be an illusion if you keep staying it's about confident. To become,
that's what I'll
our email address.
It's an illusion.
Is, rent, illusion. Utilities, illusion. FlowTrackPodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to the FlowTrack Podcast YouTube channel. Recording these every morning for the rest of the Olympics, right after the action concludes. So you can hop on live and watch us. Also download the show wherever you get audio podcasts. Thanks to Colt. Thanks to Travis. He's Gordon. I'm Kevin. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.